Blog Talk Radio.
Buenos dias, folks. Good morning. Thank you for joining me here at Politics Done Right. I'm McBurto Willis, your host. What a week it has been. You can already see we had great things happening, we had mediocre things happening, and we had laughable things happening. But that is the way it goes. For those who don't know what we're going to try to talk about today, we're going to start off, of course, after I read my first blog with Caitlin Sapossi Belknap, who is the director of Movement. She has some great news to talk about. Our amendment that actually got through this week, it actually got submitted to Congress. Which is an accomplishment. But again, this was one of those weeks. It was the week of the State of the Union address. Some people don't think much about that. Personally, I believe in the engagement vote in electoral politics and the grassroots movement, so I pay attention to both. Marco Rubio today became the Republicans' point man to give them the semblance of inclusivity. As you can imagine, for those who watch my show or listen to this show, I am never too kind. However, in my attempts of civility, to be or to simply wash away When anyone attempts, to put it as nice as I can, to screw the middle class, to select a group with smoke and mirrors in an attempt to distract and do things that are diametrically opposed to their own interests. In that light, I wrote a blog on Marco Rubio's response to the president's speech. I initially wrote a first blog that simply said I couldn't believe folks were only concentrating on Mr. Rubio's use of the water bottle or loss of the water bottle for that matter. But later on, as I thought it through and continued to write this blog, it also made some sense. So let's start with the reading of the blog. It's titled, and this particular one isn't the rather distracting one that I wrote with respect to what most in the community think about Rubio, but this one is based on policies based on his speech. Here goes it. Titled, Marco Rubio's Speech, Forget the Water Bottle. It's the Middle Class Killing Policies. Marco Rubio knew he was on center stage with all eyes upon him searching for any potential gotchas. Then near two-thirds of his speech, he did it. He created a Twitter-Facebook moment. Could it have been contrived to ensure a gullible media concentrated on manufactured gaffe instead of an old and tired repetitive speech of ideas rejected by the voting citizens 3 months ago? One can never know for sure. Given the Jindal experience, it is rather likely. If one bases the rebuttal of the president's speech on a false premise that is diametrically opposed to what the speech was about, it makes the rebuttal at best disingenuous, if not outright false. He started his speech, or somewhere in the beginning of his speech, he said the following. Presidents of both parties, from John F. Kennedy to Ronald Reagan, have known that our free enterprise economy is the source of our middle-class prosperity. But President Obama, he believes it is the cause of our problems, that the economic downturn happened because our government didn't tax enough, spend enough, and control enough. And therefore, as you heard tonight, his solution to virtually every problem we face is for Washington to tax more, borrow more, and spend more. This idea that our problems were caused by a government that was too small, it's just not true. In fact, a major cause of our recent downturn was a housing crisis created by reckless government policies. And the idea that more taxes and more government spending is the best way to help hardworking middle-class taxpayers, that's an old idea that's failed and every time it's been tried. An idea that's failed every time it's been tried. What speech was this guy watching? What last 4 years was this guy in? Here's the continuation of the blog. His entire speech is encapsulated in the above multitude of lies. The president has never spoken about government being too small. He has spoken about right-sizing government for the job and not sizing to ensure the hoarding of capital by the real takers in our society, those that manipulate capital without a real day's work. It is ludicrous to assert that the economy was brought down by reckless government policies as opposed to a deficit in government regulations that allowed the bankers to decimate the world's economies for the gain of a few. It was the bankers, the private sector that created financial instruments like CDSs and CDOs. Folks, those are known as credit debt obligations, something to that effect, to get around government regulations, credit default swaps, etc. Many of these unregulated instruments, also known as derivatives, had no assets backing them, and when one collapsed, the world economy fell like a house of cards. To imply that more taxes on the wealthy from the current low rates and spending on programs to enhance education, research, and the like do not help the middle class is to forget that the past is prologue. He should remember programs like the GI Bill, Social Security, and other programs that provably were the catalyst to moving many in the middle class. Maybe Rubio should read Roosevelt's Second Bill of Rights, an unrealized hope that America's middle class should force politicians to effect. Rubio said Obamacare was a failure. Maybe he should ask all those that had pre-existing conditions that now have insurance, my wife inclusive, though she always had continuous insurance, those pre-existing laws were terrible. Maybe he should ask those who are waiting for October 1st to jump into health exchanges where their application cannot be denied. Maybe he should talk to those who are on the verge of bankruptcy because of their rescissions of their policies or reaching the cap on their policies. Maybe he should remember that all those years his party was in control. They had no major legislation on health care except for an unpaid budget busting drug program in an attempt to win the vote of the elderly. Rubio was supportive of immigration in his speech. Votes are what is important in politics, folks. When he had the opportunity to vote for the Dream Act, he voted no. Family values, anyone? Rubio continued to pound by stating that if one disagreed with the president, he accused them of wanting to protect the rich. If the policies that one supports protects one class, the rich, at the detriment of the other, the poor and the middle class, then facts and outcomes are probative. Rubio in his speech and Republicans in general have continuously been pushing the tenet of growing out of deficits and lowering taxes will enhance growth, and that lowering taxes will enhance growth. Unfortunately, Bush's very low taxes did not improve our economy. Reagan's low taxes occurred with exploding deficits and large military expenditures, a Keynesian boost to the economy. Who knows? Reagan was actually a Keynesian. George H.W. Bush, George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton tax increases did return both economic growth and fiscal sanity. Remember, Bush broke that promise? Bush should have been lauded for that. He actually did a positive when he did that back in the early 90s, as I recall. There are specific reasons for this beyond the scope of this article. Suffice it to say that the marginal propensity to consume of the masses is larger than that of the wealthy, and taxing the wealthy to prevent taxing the middle class more increases overall economic activity with a government that does less borrowing. Folks, again, this is basic economics 101. There was nothing else of material value in Rubio's speech other than boilerplate cliches that have no basis in fact or act. The speech rebutted a speech President Obama did not give. His speech presented generalities without real-world implementations. His bottle water moment was necessary to deflect examination of his speech that was nothing more than the rehash of an ideology that has never worked, an ideology that has been systematically killing the middle class. Folks, the telephone number, 646-929-2495. As you know, all our problems, all these problems, both on both sides, Democratic side, Republican side, has been caused by the corrupting influence of money in politics. And there are several groups, Coffee Party Inclusive, Move to Amend Inclusive, that are working to solve these issues, working on policies to solve these issues. Today, we will speak to the director of Move to Amend. Her name is Caitlin Sapossi Belknap, and I'm not sure if she is on yet, but I see some calls with their ones up. I may have to go through you to figure out if she's here or not, because I didn't. Wasn't smart enough to get her, remember her cell number. So, 267, are you Caitlin?
Hi, it's Brother. This is Brian.
Hey, Brian, hold on for me, my brother. Okay, 513, are you Caitlin?
No, sorry, it's Berto.
Okay, nope, no sorriness, sir. Caitlin just may not be here yet. Let's try 620, are you Caitlin?
620, that's Jack Golden.
That is my buddy, but anyway, so Caitlin is not with us yet. Caitlin, if you're with us, please hit the number one so that I can see that your hand's up. Please hit the number one if you're already here. This was a rather tough week, as I mentioned before, folks, because there was a lot of hoopla. We had, of course, the filibustering of the nomination of Chuck Hagel, a very respected Republican veteran. And we also had the water bottle moment, of course, with our good old guy Rubio. And we also had the move to amend, not resolution, but bill entered into Congress. I think 707 is here. Caitlin, is this you?
Yes. Hi, Egberto. Good day.
Thank you for being with us, Caitlin. Why don't you, I kind of gave you a little preamp before you got here. Why don't you tell me a little bit of what has happened this week? In fact, start with Monday.
Well, on Monday, we had a press conference, Move to Amend, at the National Press Club, where some of our leadership team members and Representative Rick Nolan from the Duluth, Minnesota area introduced and announced that we would be, that Rick and also Representative Mark Pocan from Wisconsin would be introducing our amendment, the We the People Amendment, which says that corporations and other artificial entities do not have constitutional rights, and money is not free speech and can be regulated by government and must be disclosed, any campaign spending.
Now, why is that so important to everybody listening to this show?
Well, when corporations have constitutional rights, it means they can overturn our democratically enacted laws. The most kind of recent example that's on everyone's mind most of the time is Citizens United, where the Supreme Court basically overturned McCain-Feingold. But there are many other examples of corporations using their money to sue governments, whether local, state, or even sometimes federal, like with Citizens United, to overturn laws meant to protect the public, either worker safety laws, environmental protection laws, consumer health and safety laws, democracy or election protection laws. All of these are subject to corporations overturning them by claiming that they violate their either First Amendment rights or Fourth Amendment rights or 14th Amendment rights. And it's imperative that we get corporations out of our Constitution so that we can actually make the laws and policies that are in the best interest of our country. And then also, we have to make sure that money is not speech, which is an idea invented by the Supreme Court in the 1970s, which allows people with more money and corporations to spend potentially unlimited amounts of money through indirect contributions and then a whole lot of money through direct contributions, tilting the election process in the favor of those who have the most money and making our system quite undemocratic. So those two points are the pillars of the Move to Amend Coalition campaign, and we're very excited that we have a partner in Congress now, or two.
Now, why is it so important that we actually were the first to get an amendment of this type? In other words, that covered all bases in as a bill.
Well, we think that it's important that, well, we think that there, we need to assume that we might only have one chance at this amendment. So it's important that both of those two pieces, corporate constitutional rights and money of speech, be included in one amendment so that one of those options is not bargained away at some point. And then furthermore, since Citizens United sparked a lot of attention and interest and energy, there have been other efforts that have come forward from Congress and from some other organizations that attempt to address the problem, but only partially. So because Citizens United was kind of what opened a lot of people's eyes, they want to focus on Citizens United. But Move to Amend's position is that we cannot just overturn Citizens United. We cannot go back to the politics of 2009 when corporations ruled policy in this country and our election process, and it was almost as bad as it is now. And I think most Americans understand that. Our experience has not been that there really is hardly anyone out there who, other than kind of establishment perspectives, who thinks that a Band-Aid is going to be adequate for this problem. And I think folks recognize that we have an opportunity before us by all of the energy and that the situation was kind of laid bare by Citizens United, and that we need to seize this opportunity and not go for a halfway measure and not start compromising just as we are growing, but instead really put out what the systemic solution to the problem is. And then the other thing I'll just say, because it often comes up, is there is also a thread of discussion around exempting some artificial entities, kind of our friends, so unions or nonprofits. There's a desire to carve out an exemption for them. And it is critical that we understand the ramifications of what we're doing and that we be prepared for the ripple effect that will have to happen in the law of this country after the amendment passes to adjust and make sure that entities do have certain protections and privileges, is what the kind of legal way to think of it would be, under the law that come through the legislative process. And that would apply for unions, nonprofits, and for-profit corporations. But we can't carve out an exemption for two reasons. One, it would make it dead in the water for conservatives. We can't say, well, our side, you know, it doesn't count for our side. And then more importantly, in terms of getting at the root of it, it's not intellectually on its face. You can't say that only human beings are people, but also some other entities are people too. The
right.
idea that our rights do not come from government, they come from the fact that we are, you know, alive, they're inalienable, is what we're trying to recognize, that there's no place for any entity created by government to have rights in the Constitution. Any powers that those entities have should come through the legislative process, and we have to be true to that. If nothing else, for then we make a giant loophole. Citizens United, for example, was a nonprofit corporation. So if we exempted unions and nonprofits, then Citizens United still could have happened.
Exactly. But you know what? I'm glad that you mentioned something that is rather important. You said what was different post and pre-Citizens United? Not much. And moreover, if we take a look at the election, supposedly Citizens United would, you know, one of the things that I wrote about a few months ago was that what happens if Citizens United, we have a status quo election with Citizens United, meaning that the people that Citizens United would most, we assumed would most benefits, which are people on the right, it doesn't really get realized. What does that do for the movement? And I'm glad that you mentioned before that what was different pre and post. It's not that anything is really that much different. So what we need is really money out of politics entirely and through the process that you're talking about.
Right, absolutely. And it is really important, too, that we recognize, again, that corporations, because they're the ones with the most money to utilize their rights. And it's important, too, that we're talking about corporations because as an entity, they are all the same and we're not distinguishing. But when it comes down to the realities of the situation in terms of who actually benefits from these entities having so-called constitutional rights, it isn't, you know, a mom-and-pop business. It isn't even, you know, medium-sized companies. It is the large companies with billions of dollars that can actually sue the U.S. government and say that this regulation is or this law that is meant to protect against harms that we may be causing is a violation of our rights, whether it's our right to future profit under the Fifth Amendment or our right to privacy under the Fourth Amendment. So therefore, OSHA protections or environmental health and safety protections are, you know, subject to warrants and checks. And there may be examples in the law later, after the amendment passes, where we do want to safeguard some of these protections, but not in the Constitution. We need
exactly.
to make sure that they're accountable to the people, because clearly I think everyone recognizes that the system that we have has run rampant and out of our control, and we've got to put the genie back in the bottle.
You know, I think one of the important things that you stated there that a lot of people don't understand, they think that removing the rights from corporations within the Constitution actually means removing the rights from corporations altogether, not realizing that all you're saying is that you want it to be in the legislative process and not inherently so.
Exactly, because when it's inherently so, what that really means, because there's kind of two actors in the Constitution, there's the government and the people, and really the Constitution lays out what things the government, aka all of us collectively, cannot do against the individuals. And so if corporations are on that people side, what it really means is all of us collectively through our laws cannot touch certain aspects of what they're doing. And we can see what the results of that are with, you know, in horrible environmental degradation, human rights violations, just basic workers' rights and wages off the table through, you know, corporations being able to buy our government and then turn around and make sure that the policies that benefit them are what we have. So there's no, I don't think anyone would question that the system is just totally corrupt at this point. I serve on a board locally, on my water district board, with a Republican who actually asked me about this effort, about Move to Amend, every month. He doesn't want to totally admit that he's on board, but whenever we talk about, you know, what the ramifications would be, and he's a very conservative Republican too, but he says, you know, I totally agree with you that it's too much. It's the excess and the ability to rein these entities in is out of our control at this point.
This is not a Republican or Democratic issue. Now, I want to say a little bit, and folks that are waiting to ask questions, I'm going to come to you in a minute, but I just want to get this piece completed. With the right, this is something that has to be done right and something that we shouldn't try to speed up. We need to actually get our population, our citizens informed so that whichever direction we take, whether it is constitutional conventions or through the legislative process for amending the Constitution, citizens are well aware to direct the politicians on what to do. Now, over the last few months, actually, and lately, last few weeks, I've been seeing other organizations like ours seeming to, and many, not just one, seeming to maybe want to go faster than we probably think we should. Can you give me a rationale for slowing things down to a pace that our population can adapt to?
Well, it makes me think of the Buddhist proverb, you know, things are so dire and so important that we must move very carefully and slowly. I think that it is absolutely true that we need to be very careful about the momentum and energy of this movement being co-opted by Washington, D.C., not even intentionally in some ways, but the way the whole system works on the Hill, it's all about, you know, wins and being able to report out successes. And I think that we need to be very careful and very vigilant to make sure that we don't allow this to go into Washington, D.C. and become a battle there before we really have the numbers out in the rest of the country that are not just, you know, with us in polling or with us when we put a measure on the ballot, which we already have, and that's important to note because we didn't have that, you know, 4 years ago on this issue. But that are actually with us in that they are organized, they understand exactly what we're doing and what we will not compromise away, and that we are mobilized to act. I mean, we need to make sure that the leadership for this stays with the people so that when our Congress people are ready, and, you know, and they may mean well, but they want to respond to us because they feel the heat. They're starting to feel the heat, and they want to respond. But the problem is that Congress on the whole is still totally beholden to corporate power. And so we need to make sure that they don't start to move to respond to us and we come out with something that at the end of the day is really just okay with the system that we already have, and it hasn't done very much. And then we need to do the work of re-galvanizing everyone to understand that. I mean, it's such a tremendous risk when you have this kind of a situation where the people are clearly mad, clearly want something, and it's starting to get the attention. We need to make sure that our leadership on the side of the people who understand this issue, that there's a problem, do not say, well, let's do something now just so that we can say that we did something and assuage people's anger. We need to let it build and then organize and mobilize it so that people actually are willing to vote on this as a litmus test issue so that we can actually go into congressional elections and elections for state legislature, and we can actually say, what's your position on the We the People Amendment? You need to tell us right now. And if you don't, tell us, we'll make it such an issue that you can't avoid it. And if you're not for it, we will see to it that you're unelected. And we have another candidate right here who's just as viable, who is going to take your place. And if you are for it, we'll hold you to it until we've got, it's a game of math, until we've got the numbers that we need. And we just don't have them yet. We have people still trying to say that the problem is just Citizens United. And that stands to take the momentum and the energy, run out in front of the movement, and we'll come away with a halfway measure that will be something like healthcare, where the real solution was not even on the table. And in a lot of ways, our side sold us out on that for the sake of getting something that really no one's very happy with.
Right. Now, I want to say one specific thing about Move to Amend, and why I wanted to bring this subject into the coffee party fold this morning. There's a Move to Amend actually goes out in the field. Where is David right now, Barnstorming?
David's in Florida right now.
Okay. Barnstorm, Move to Amend touches people. Move to Amend engages people physically as well as socially through social media. And one of the things that I wanted to bring to Coffee Party is some of what Coffee Party is doing relative to some new initiatives that we have in going out in the field with in every single congressional district makes this symbiotic relationship perfect. So for those Coffee Party people listening, listen to what has been accomplished so far and listen to what we are going to be asking, begging you to join in and accomplish. And with that, let me go ahead and hit the phone and see if there's anybody that has a question for you, Caitlin. 513, you are hot. Who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, Alberto. Loves and hugs to you, sweetie. This is Laura.
Laura, how are you doing?
Okay. We're going to do our Valentine's Day dinner tonight.
All right. Well, good for you. Behave yourself now. You have a question
for Caitlin?
Restaurant.
Oh, I guess okay. You could run out on your bill or something, but I don't know.
You have a question for Caitlin?
Laura? Hang on.
Go ahead.
One of the biggest problems is nobody ever seems to have the time or the desire, I don't know what it is, to tell the complete picture. Just because when you do A, you get B 200 years ago doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen today.
True.
And sometimes what someone attributes as the cause for a result isn't always the cause because they're looking at things in a vacuum. Sometimes there's several things affecting the result of something.
Sure.
So, how do we do that, Caitlin? How do we learn
to look at
everything involved in the picture?
I definitely am somebody who believes that we should look at history to learn and make informed decisions going forward. And if you look at, the history of court cases that have built this doctrine of corporate constitutional rights, it has always been through court cases. It's not like the people have ever rallied to put corporations in the Constitution through an amendment. We've had to assert our own rights through the amendment process because they weren't actually just given to us. But I think that at the end of the day, this is another reason why it's really critical that we do this through building a movement, and a movement that is deep and informed, because this amendment is not going to make democracy happen in this country. It's going to make democracy possible. It's going to lay a foundation upon which we could build a new set of laws, a new set of criteria for which we'll do our electoral process and our legal process and make sure that the people have the power. But if we haven't built a strong enough movement, then the amendment is only as good as the enforcement ability of our organized selves after the fact. I mean, it's telling that after the Civil War, to, among other things, end slavery, there actually had to be three amendments just to try and secure the rights of the people who were freed. And the Supreme Court actually was able to, just a few years later, relatively speaking, basically turn that on its head by allowing Jim Crow segregation. So, you know, it's up to us to make sure that what comes out of this is the real solution that we want. And, you know, if this amendment alone will not do it, then, you know, then it will be up to us to take the next step forward. But there's no question that, you know, we can't really take those steps with the corporation, with the Constitution basically being used against us by organized money. And so we've got to wrest that back, and then, and for some people it's not even back, right? You know, but we've got to wrest it away and then use it to make sure that we come out with the society that we want and we deserve.
Yeah, but how do we deal with the issue of people blaming something? Well, back in Reagan's day, he did this and that resulted in this, so that's what we should do again. And it turned out that had nothing to do with the result. It was other factors that had to do with it. How do we hold these people's feet to the fire to give us the whole truth?
I want to jump in before Caitlin comes in there. When you mentioned something about Reagan, when somebody said something about the Reagan results, right? Let me tell you, numbers never, ever lie. Unfortunately, most people that come on TV lie about the numbers. There is not only empirical but factual evidence that the decimation of the middle class over the last 30 years were directly related to the policies created by supply side economics. That is something that one needs not even discuss. So those are things that we know. But I think what Caitlin is talking about has more to do with framework than what has already happened. Caitlin?
Yeah, and Laura, I would encourage you, if you haven't already heard of the Powell Memo, I would encourage you to read it. It was written by Lewis Powell, who went on to become a justice in the Supreme Court, who was basically responsible for the Buckley v. Valeo decision, which equated money with free speech. And he basically laid out what the plan of the upper echelons of this country was in response to the 1960s and 70s, where they thought they were going to lose, early 70s, where they thought they were going to lose control of this country. And he laid out a plan for how to use the Chamber of Commerce to, you know, help bring in local business, to convince them that what's good for Walmart is good for them.
Foundation.
He talked about how to, I'm sorry, go ahead, what?
Remember the Heritage Foundation?
Right, yes, to set up a number of organizations that would basically put out messages and, you know, studies and propaganda to convince us that we should move in a different direction, which was about enshrining, you know, large corporations with control in this country, and then also to wrest it away where that was needed through the Supreme Court. So I'd encourage you to look at it, because I don't think we should get stuck in history, but I actually think that we should be clear that there are people who have actually laid out a course for us to get exactly where we are now, and that's exactly where they want us to be. And those people do not have our interests at heart. They have their own interests, and in some ways they're very short, limited own interests, because for their children's sake or their grandchildren's sake, you know, this world cannot sustain the situation that we have going on, as we're seeing.
Yeah, well, I think, Kate, the thing about history is that it's the general events and it's human nature that has not changed. And when human nature does not change, the general events will always continue to cycle.
But I don't think that people are inherently bad. I don't think that people are inherently so greedy. I think we have that impulse, but I also think that the problem is that we have taken the greediest people in our society, the people who are most sick with greed and self, ego-driven, and we have let them be the ones who are in charge. And that's what's crazy, and that's what's wrong. I don't think that most people would be making the decisions that are being made. But we don't have control over those decisions because we're not in control of our government.
But you know what? It's so interesting what you just said, Caitlin. And I mean, it just kind of hit me when you said most people are good. And in fact, that is the reason why a lot of times the worst get to the top, because most people are good and just let things slide.
Yeah, I think that we do, you know, we do have to come to terms with how to hold ourselves and, you know, collectively and individually accountable in a way that is a little bit more rigorous than what we have going on. And I don't mean, like, you know, punishment-wise, but it's too easy at this point to kind of just turn away and do other things, and that's, you know, also now, part of the
whole situation. I like the punishment part, though. I think we should punish those who have really decimated the middle class, and I'm all for that. I'm for that. But, Laura, let me get 620 in. 620, who do I have the honor of speaking with? This sounds like my buddy out there. Who is this?
Hello?
Yes, you're on.
This is Jack Golding.
Hey, Jack Golding, talk to me.
I want to ask Caitlin what she feels. She feels about, we had a primary. She's from California. I lived in California, and we voted in a primary where it was nonpartisan. I think you have nonpartisan primaries. I think that would be a solution to many of our problems with politics.
What do you think, Caitlin?
Well, the system is new in California.
Around in the late 80s or the 90s or something like that.
Yeah, they did, Jack. Let her answer. Let's hear her response.
Primary. Partisanship is the problem.
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from, Jack, on that. I mean, I do not belong to either of the two dominant parties. I get what you mean. But unfortunately, I mean, we'll see what happens, because we've actually only had one election statewide with this new open primary system. And then, unfortunately, what it kind of means is that the two candidates who have the most money will move on. And it doesn't really matter what party they're in, you're right. But it also is a disadvantage for independent parties. I belong to the Green Party, and I think that the risk with the open primaries, but you still have political parties, is that it really actually hurts those without as much money. And so I agree with you that the partisanship is a huge problem, and we need to break through, and we need multiple, you know, a multi-party system or something along those lines. But I'm not sure that gets to the root of the issue to just open it up, because it still is the case, without doing other reforms, that, you know, money carries the day in those open primary elections.
Let me give a call out to our folks again, because we have a lot of people here on the phone, but nobody has their hands up. 646-929-2495 is the telephone number. Give us a call if you have some questions. We still have Caitlin with us talking about the amendment and for all practical purposes, the middle class. 646-929-2495. I see another caller up. 707, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, let me take you off speaker. This is Linda from California.
Linda from California, talk to me.
Okay, I know Jack was saying about the primary, and I had called in to Janine the other day, and maybe he missed it, but we have the open primary now. And I agree with your guest.
Caitlin.
Yeah, I missed the first part, so I missed the introductions. But that is exactly what's happening, unfortunately, is I do work for the Democratic Party. I will come out and say that. But we take in, you know, Greens, we take in declined estates, we take in, you know, everybody that thinks like we do. We don't, it's like I say, an open field. What is happening is, like, the Greens and the people like that, Peace and Freedom.
And the Justice Party.
Right. They are, that's another party. And they're very minimalized now, because unless they have a big donor or something, I don't know how that's what we were afraid of. It was basically going to mean that it would kill the Green Party, and it would kill, you know, that's why we weren't supporting the measure when it was voted on.
Well, what do you think, Caitlin, is the solution to, I mean, I know we are working on the money out of politics portion, but do you believe sometime we really should go to some sort of government-funded elections?
Well, I personally support publicly funded elections, absolutely. I think that, you know, elections are the infrastructure of our democracy, just like the roads are the infrastructure of our transportation system, and we pay for those publicly because they don't belong to anybody privately.
Well,
they belong to all of us. And so
I want to correct you, Caitlin. In Texas, you must not have read what's going on here with our government trying to take over the roads.
Okay. You're right. In Texas, you're a little bit further along in the dream, some people's dream of privatizing everything. but there is still an ethic in other corners about public, you know, ownership of these systems that we all use and we all need. And I think that our elections are that for our democracy. And I also want to point out that, you know, it's not just about the independent parties, which I think are critical for actually helping to hold accountable and pull out either the Democrats on the left or the Republicans on the right. The Libertarians do the same thing. I think, you know, there's an attempt to try and keep the Republicans a little more sane. But it also is for, you know, just progressives in general who do not have the big money. Linda, you're in 707, so I'm guessing that I am in Eureka. So, you know,
up by Crescent City.
Okay, yeah. So we're in the same congressional district, and what we saw with the open primary last time is there was, you know, an opportunity to potentially have two Democrats in the primary, but that did not pan out because one of those Democrats had a lot more money than the other, and unfortunately, Norman Solomon, who would have been an excellent representative for this district, wasn't able to eke it out, and the two candidates with the most money won, which is what happens always. So it doesn't really matter whether the primary is open or not. I think we need, you know, publicly funded elections. I think we need proportional representation or instant runoff voting so that people can actually vote their full choice on the ballot. I mean, it's not hard. Other countries use these systems, and their countries are more democratic. We're just way behind the times here.
There used to be I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Linda.
Okay, all right. Well, this is probably old news, but years ago, and I probably still have them bookmarked on my computer, but the there was a group called Just $6, and it was basically saying that if every citizen just paid $6, then all public elections could be funded, or at least maybe it was just the national ones. I don't know exactly what the layout was. But I always supported it because I thought, what a good idea, you know, that everybody just chipped in a little bit and got the big money out of it. And I don't know if they even exist anymore.
I don't know about that, but I have also heard that it really wouldn't be that much. And in states that have tried to have publicly funded election elements, like Maine in particular, you're actually seeing people who would never get elected to state office in their state legislature doing a great job. People whose background is in, you know, plumbing and waitressing, and those folks are just as capable of governing as everyone else. And it's not like they don't still have to run and convince people and make their case. But you're actually seeing more of the people being elected to serve in office. And unfortunately, the Supreme Court has also taken aim at publicly funded elections. So, you know, in Arizona, where they also tried, the Supreme Court has stripped away elements of people's right to actually pass laws to pay for elections themselves, saying that that's a violation of people's, you know, First Amendment rights to spend money in elections because money is speech, which is why we got to get that overturned.
That is so sad. Now, Evan just put in the chat room that website that you just mentioned, Linda. It's called just6dollars.org, www.just6dollars.org. And apparently he found it. So check that out. I don't know anything about it, but, you know, Evan finds things rather quickly. You have any other questions for Caitlin, Linda? And by the way, folks, it is 646 929-2495. There's a lot of you guys on, but nobody asking questions. If you don't come and ask Caitlin questions, we're going to switch to the next subject. So this is your time.
No, I don't really.
Okay,
really,
Linda, I have another some more questions just came on.
Well, 518.
Who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Egberto, Joe Pomponio.
Senor Pomponio, Senor Pomponio, how are you doing, sir?
Intently listening. And, Caitlin, I have a couple of things I wanted to run by you. We have two sponsors for the Money Out of Politics bill. I did get the tweet on that on Monday. What can we do out here to work in conjunction with them to try and help build momentum to get more people in Congress involved?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I mean, certainly now it took, I guess there was some sort of weird administrative issue in the Library of Congress around getting the resolution number because of the State of the Union, they said. So it took a little bit longer, but now we have the resolution number.
HJ Res 29.
29, yes, thank you. I wish it was 28 because that would be the amendment we need, but that's okay, 29. It'll be easy to remember because just think of 28 and then 29.
Let's think 28 plus 1.
Right. So you're certainly, you know, we could, co-sponsors would be nice and good. One of the things, though, that we're sort of trying to figure out is how to be very clear that the amendment being introduced does not mean that we're going to change our strategy. I don't know if you heard at the beginning, but we were talking about how, you know, we can't just take this to Washington, D.C. before we've built our numbers. So, you know, in front of me here at the office, I have a map of 150 pins all over the country where we have local affiliates that are doing the work of bringing this message and this campaign into local communities, not just to, you know, inform them, but actually to bring them in and organize with them for the effort. And we need to keep doing that because we don't have critical mass yet. So it's important that we not just turn all our attention to Washington, D.C. and lobbying our people. You know, we haven't even sent out a blast yet asking people to lobby their congressperson because we don't want to don't want people to misunderstand what it means. What this means, really, is that Congress has responded to us. These two folks responded to us, and we allowed that to happen because we wanted to make sure that our proposal was there along with the other proposals that have come more out of Washington, D.C., and we wanted to make sure the people's proposal was there, too. But we also need to be clear that while, you know, I'm not saying don't call your congressperson and ask them to sign on as a co-sponsor or find out what their position is on HJ 29, but at the same time, if you're not part of a community that has a local affiliate, that's what I would ask that you do, that you get involved with Move to Amend's campaign that is really focused on the grassroots level and is quite empowering for people who are doing the work at the grassroots level because that's where we think that change actually happens, and then we build that up, and then we go to Washington, D.C., and we, you know, it's on our terms.
No, I want to add something to that. Joe, right now, as you also know, Coffee Party is working symbiotically with Move to Amend. And right now, Frank, one of our ex-board of directors that just left, is in the process of putting together. We don't quite know what the name is going to be, but having Coffee Party members in every single district, I see that fusion going forward as something where we will be able to leverage this action completely. So one of the things I want to say is stay tuned. Actually, you're probably going to be on one of our calls on Monday for I probably won't be able to make it, but you'll be there for discussing what we will be doing in that regard. So rest assured that we're moving from just sending emails, posting, and the likes to physical action where we're actually engaging flesh and blood.
Can I add one more thing?
Please do, Caitlin.
I also encourage folks to get involved this spring with our Pledge to Amend campaign, which is actually targeted at state legislatures and state legislators to ask them to pledge to amend, because we all know that the states are intimately involved with a constitutional amendment. So we need to make sure that they're ready to ratify it. Or if Congress refuses to act, we need to make sure that they're prepared to go around Congress. So our model bill to that end is a bill that was introduced in Minnesota this month, or at the end of January, actually, the We the People Act, which will actually put Congress on notice if it passes through the Minnesota state legislature, and it has been introduced in both houses and will be up for hearing next week, for the first hearing to go out of the Senate, that actually says, you know, we call on Congress to pass the We the People Amendment, and if Congress fails to act within 1 year, then we, the legislature of Minnesota, will call for an Article 5 constitutional convention to pass this amendment. And so to begin to really beat the drums so that, again, Congress cannot just ignore us. And I think that that is a much more powerful thing to do right now, is to focus on our state legislators and on our on the American people.
Now, that, Caitlin, would be big. That would be big. I have callers on 630 and 640. I'm coming to you shortly, so bear with me. My mouse just gave out on me. Joe, I'm going to keep you on to ask later, but let me bring in 630. Who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, Egberto. It's Jeff McKinley.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you?
Talk to me, my brother.
Okay, yeah, I had a question for Caitlin. I apologize, I may have missed this. You may have already explained this earlier in the program, but if you could tell me just what is the criteria for restricting corporations to, you know, form PACs? They're not allowed to give specifically to, or there's more restrictions on them giving specifically to campaigns and to the candidate, but this is more of a, you know, they can just go spend it on their own without coordinating, you know, wink, wink, I guess, in so many terms. But what is the criteria for restricting this? If this is truly a First Amendment issue, why does it not, you know, apply to formations of people that come together in association? And with that, what would be the difference between corporations and unions as far as these restrictions?
Well, and you're talking about, you know, under the amendment, right?
Right.
For all these questions. So I have been saying corporations a lot, and we do that because in a lot of ways that's who provoked the situation. But and we did talk about this a little bit earlier, that the amendment actually applies to all artificial entities, which means all entities created by government. So associations that are recognized under the law and formed, you know, through some kind of act of incorporation or articles would be affected by this amendment. So that would apply to incorporated unions and nonprofits and political action committees as well. So what it just says is that they do not have inherent rights under the Constitution. It doesn't actually say how they will operate in elections. That would be left to legislation to follow after the amendment to determine those things and to differentiate between those different entities and for us to decide which ones, if any, might still be able to participate in elections and to what extent.
Okay.
I want to add to that before you answer, Jeff. I want to clarify something. Remember, this is a constitutional amendment. It removes the power from the judiciary from executing law in effect, okay? In effect, it is saying we can legislatively pass anything. It's just we're leaving this outside the domain of the judiciary. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. Well, just a couple comments on that. One is I find this interesting. I don't know how much Democratic backing you would get because unions spend about $700 million a year on political campaigns, so that would dry up overnight. However, the more important and salient point, I believe, of this is that your criteria for restricting the First Amendment to organizations of people who tend to form under corporations or these other types of entities, you're saying that they do not have rights under the Constitution. Could you please clarify then, do then the Takings Clause or maybe the Fourth Amendment search and seizure clauses, those do not apply to corporations? So if a government can go in and just take what they want, you do not have to give them remuneration or compensation because they are an entity? How do we distinguish between the Takings Clause, the Fourth Amendment search and seizure, and the First Amendment rights of saying yes to this one, no to those?
Well, we are saying that inherently those entities, as entities, do not have those rights. The individuals that are involved still do. So there is a nexus there somewhere around exactly what that means and how that plays out. But what we are saying is that associations and entities that are created separate with powers separate and already also, you know, they do not have those separate rights that, you know, basically by coming together and the act of separating their responsibilities, which is what, you know, like limited liability, for example, for corporations does, from the individual responsibilities, then they do not also, though, get to keep the rights separate from the individuals. And so, and as I said earlier, you know, there will have to be a whole body of law built around what exactly this looks like for different kinds of entities and different kinds of situations. And I have confidence that we will be able to figure that out. Corporations were not written into the Constitution on purpose. There was 100-plus years in this country's history where corporations did not have constitutional rights. Business still operated. Things still moved forward. And what we need to do is figure out what kinds of powers and privileges folks need to do without letting them get out of our control.
Well, you know, constitutional rights are really given to corporations for all practical purposes to get around. I hate to put it this way, but it's pretty much hurt the average person, period. Jeff, I need to jump to 404, but I'm going to keep you hot so that you
can I just add one other thing about unions, since you had mentioned
sure.
that earlier?
Sure,
we are seeing a lot of Democratic support, and we are seeing union support as well. And I think that's because, especially at the rank and file level, but many individual unions, too, understand that, yes, they may be trying to play the election game, but at the end of the day, they're actually losing that game.
Absolutely.
And if they were spending their resources on organizing more membership, that would be a lot better way to increase their power than trying to throw it and compete with multinational corporations with billions of dollars to spare.
I can tell you, as a part of Move to Amend, we had a convergence in Denver, and who was the speaker at the convergence?
It was hosted by the Teamsters, and they were absolutely on board.
Thank you very much. 404, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Robert Rodrigo in Atlanta. Good afternoon, everybody.
Roberto Rodrigo, make your point, my brother.
I was wondering a question. Actually, there was something posted on the Coffee Party webpage a little while ago. There are three bills that have been introduced recently about public financing and getting money out of politics. I was wondering if you were aware of those, and if those, I'm actually trying to read them now to see, you know, how far they go. But my main question is how much are you working with other people, or let me draw back a second. I'm looking at one, for example, called the Grassroots Democracy Act. Are you familiar with that one? I guess would be my first question.
Not explicitly, but I do know that there are several bills and there have been several proposals over the years and recently as well on publicly funded elections.
Yeah, this one is done by John Sarbanes. He's a congressman from the 3rd Congressional District in Maryland, for example. I'm just looking it over now. I'm hoping what this means, of course, is that there are greater people that want to do the same thing that Move to Amend is trying to accomplish, obviously. There seems to be one here called the Public Financing Bill to Get Money Out of Politics by John Yarmuth, who's a congressman out of the 3rd District in Kentucky. This is the Fair Elections. Oh, I'm sorry. It's called the Fair Elections Now Act.
Mm-hmm.
House number 269. Apparently this was done on January 16, 2013. So these are very recent, and of course the timing of with your press conference last week. Congratulations on that, by the way. There's an Empowering Citizens Act as well. Apparently this one was in September by David Price from North Carolina. It seemed to me that at least this may open up a window of other congressmen that work with two that were with you on Monday to get on board this, however that process is going to go down the road to get some more support, you know, as well as, you know, obviously getting the state legislatures to act on that. I commend the work that you've been doing. This is an excellent thing. Everybody needs to pay attention to this.
Now, I want to ask something, Robert, because I think Caitlin needs. I want Caitlin to clarify something. Caitlin, please clarify what submission of this bill really means relative to what we believe the work that has to be done going forward before this is even realized.
Well, we think that this is a jumping off point in terms of just getting more momentum and energy. It's a benchmark that we knew we'd have to get to and that it would happen. We got a lot of media attention and thousands of new people flooding into our campaign, which is great. And that was what the point of it was. And, you know, we don't expect this Congress to actually even move forward this resolution, in all honesty. And I don't expect Congress to move forward any of the other ones that you just went through, because Congress is not, they're not our friends right now. There are some exceptions, and we need to rally those people and make sure they find each other. And if they don't completely understand what's necessary, we need to, you know, bring them along, because we do need, you know, leadership. But we're not proposing that we hand this over to them to hash out. We're not ready for that, and they're not ready for that.
I agree totally.
We are actually in the process of movement building. And, you know, that's why I speak about what we're doing, what Move to Amend is doing with all its affiliates, what Coffee Party USA is going to be doing in the districts. All these things put together are building, they're building a movement. And then when that movement reaches a critical mass that it actually is self-sustaining, you know, like the fission reactor, when you reach that critical mass where it's self-sustaining, that is what we're talking about.
Well, you know, it's almost, to being the cynic that I am, it's almost like these bills could actually, you know, the opponents could say, well, we've already done what needs to be done with the passage of these acts. Let's move on, for example.
That is,
you know,
what
mm-hmm.
Caitlin was talking about before. Caitlin, explain that, because that is so important with some of the things. Why, when certain things come down, we kind of say, please, folks, hold your horses a bit.
Right. I think that we're so not used to winning that we don't actually recognize that it's, you know, that we need to make sure we're keeping focused on the real win and that we don't settle for anything less, because exactly. And it wouldn't just be our opposition. I think it would be some of the middle of the road people or some of the people who are cynical in a different way, who actually think, you know, this is the best we can do. And, you know, I'm 33 years old. I don't want to be spending my weekends every weekend doing this work for the rest of my life.
Thanks,
I want to, you know, have a family,
old.
And I want to take care of my animals and all of this. And I'm not interested in us settling for something that we think we can win now. We need to build the power so that we can win what we need to win.
Hey, folks, she actually raises bees that produce a very nice, flavorful.
Yeah, honey. And I didn't check those bees yesterday on the last sunny day of this week. Instead, I was on my computer getting the Move to Amend database ready to hand over to our affiliates. And I don't want to have to be doing that for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and as I said, very good taste in honey. Anyway, you have any other questions for her, Rodrigo?
No, I'm good. I just wanted to make those comments.
Okay, I know Jeff had something else that he wanted to ask you. I really want to get into some other stuff, but you came on this show, Caitlin, and you just drew a whole bunch
of
interesting.
Sorry, I took it over.
you messed up all the things that I wanted to talk about. Folks, as you know, I've always said it. This show belongs to you guys, so wherever you move it is where we go. And I think Jeff, my great libertarian buddy, has something to ask. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I guess I just, you know, just to kind of summarize, you know, I don't understand the, you know, the distinguishing characteristics between, you know, if you say that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the amendments does not apply to corporations, and this is a First Amendment issue, so you say, okay, the First Amendment doesn't apply to corporations, therefore, I'm not sure exactly, like I said before, where that leaves the takings clause.
Before Caitlin answers that, and I'm sorry for interrupting you, Jeff, but I really want to ask you this. Personally, mano a mano, why is it that you think a constitution that was written that never included the word corporation in that regard, somehow you believe all those rights, those inalienable rights, belong now to corporations? Why do you, as a libertarian, believe that?
Well, I believe that because it's more of just an application of principles in a form. It's not that Well, here, let's get back. So
no, if, remember, please remember, you are a libertarian. Please answer the question from that point of view.
Yeah. Well, as a libertarian, we respect all individual rights, and we, you know, just view that an assembly of people that get together that are part of owners of a corporation, they're speaking
voice. You, as a libertarian, you have never believed as a libertarian. Only when libertarian mixed with republicanism did they believe that corporations are some entity with inalienable rights.
Well, because I look through the corporation to the individuals. If you want to take away the rights of the corporation, then they're open to search and seizure at any time. They're open to takings clauses. And then, if, you know, let's say the First Amendment. If the First Amendment doesn't apply to corporations, how is the New York Times operating? Are we going to dissect our constitutional,
how did they operate before?
There is a freedom of the press that is guaranteed by another amendment. We don't need to worry about that.
How about the takings clause? So the takings.
Well,
clause
I just want to be clear so Jeff understands. And it sounds like we have a difference of opinion, which, you know what? That's fine. But I just want to make sure everyone else understands, too, that We the People Amendment is not just applicable to the First Amendment. We are saying that no constitutional rights belong to corporations or other artificial entities.
Wow.
Not constitutional rights. Nope, because
really?
Those are inalienable rights given to us by our creator or nature or whatever you believe, and the government does not have authority to grant rights to artificial entities that it creates. That's blasphemy, and I think that is kind of blasphemy to libertarian ethics, and that's what Egberto is getting at.
That's what I was trying to explain, yeah, exactly.
Well, no, because what we do is we source it through to the individual. What you're saying that so then the takings clause does not apply to Microsoft, the takings clause doesn't. So the government can move in and say, you're a corporation, you own this as a corporation, we can take it. We can search
the second, the second piece of it is that we do need to make sure that we have legislation that does provide whatever protections we determine are necessary or privileges. And maybe the difference between me and libertarians is that I actually have faith and confidence in the people to do that through our government, because the government is us.
Did I lose everybody?
Not me.
But,
hello?
I find it, actually a little bit mind-boggling that, that the corporations have no protections. They have no takings clause.
It seems like we went down.
So then they're just open to whatever political whim of the winds are blowing at the time.
I can't tell Jeff whether we're here because I can hear you.
Okay,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're here, Egberto. It's okay?
Yes, we're here. We're here. Okay, continue.
The issue, Jeff, is that we are right now at this point where we cannot control these entities because through their money and through their ability to circumvent or overturn laws meant to rein them in, we have lost control. And so I think that we have to get it back, and we need to take ourselves seriously as a society and figure out what role corporations will play. And it should not be in the electoral process, because what corporations are is concentration of capital. That's what the point of the tool of the corporation is. It's to amass capital. That's what that has always been used for. And it's been helpful in many regards. For example, when this country was built and the government didn't have the funds to do that, they relied on private capital and in return granted special powers to those entities and those people who were putting up their money. And that was the case for colonial expansion as well, unfortunately, because what the government didn't have the money to do, private aristocrats did instead, which was rape and pillage people all over the world. So it's a dangerous tool. And I think that as flawed as our founders were in so many regards, they actually understood that when you are creating something that's purpose is to concentrate capital, you need to be very careful with what you allow it to do. And you cannot give it free rein. And I think we see what happens when you give it free rein here in 2013 when we look around.
Well, I think that, I think this was very dangerous. I think you're picking and choosing which, constitutional rights. Well, actually, you're just saying.
No, we're not.
Well,
we're not picking and choosing anything. We're also not misunderstood and thought that we were not talking about unions or nonprofits. And that's the point of Mr. Amendment. We're not picking and choosing at all. We're being very clear. and very fair across the board to say only human beings have constitutional rights. Those are inalienable
right.
rights. You can't touch those.
So Microsoft doesn't have any protections under the Takings Clause.
Not as Microsoft.
They
not
don't have any
under the Constitution. They,
right.
There
okay.
are many legislative protections that Microsoft has now, and they may have them after the amendment passes, and more. I don't know exactly what that would look like. That's the case whenever people come together and decide to pass an amendment, is then we need to figure out, and there are certainly ideas and proposals that are out there now. It's not like we're just blindly walking into this. But,
yeah, but you know what? I want to come in and say one thing here, Caitlin. You know, and this is the for those who sort of think within the Jeff mode. How comes the harm? How come you don't show the same interest with the harm caused by giving these corporations the type of constitutional rights that have created the damage that they've created? How comes you don't give that more weight so much so than you give to the corporation proper?
No, I do. I do. You know, and I think that what we have a problem with our healthcare right now and health insurance industry is because of corporatism. But it's politicians working hand in hand with the corporations through regulations, through laws, which favors some corporations over another. But that's no, you know, you
but
don't
take exactly a broad
act. But that's
exactly how corporations got constitutional rights in the first place.
But
yes.
You don't take a broad axe and say, therefore, we're going to eliminate all their constitutional rights.
No, that's not what we're doing.
You said it doesn't. The Constitution doesn't apply to corporations, so you're
and that's
taking
true.
All of that case law away.
No, but the reason why is that it should have never applied to corporations. We decided to from the judiciary to assign that. But Jeff, it seems like Evan also wants to get into the discussion. I want to bring him in, so we'll bring you back in as time allows. Jeff, you brought up some very good points. Evan, come on in.
Yeah, actually, a lot of my questions were for Jeff, so I hope you don't remove him from the conversation
quite
yet.
No, I keep people in the conversation, but go ahead. I had to turn him down because of some noise. Go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, so, I mean, if I look at something like the constitutional protections that are granted towards corporations right now, I think that it's just as obscure to play this the opposite way, right? I mean, you're asking the question, well, what protects Microsoft from us going in there and stealing their property? Well, flip it the other direction. You know, what protects the citizens when Microsoft accidentally steals their property or something of that
right.
sort?
That's the exact question I asked before.
You have right now, corporations are granted immunity, so you can get all of the profits and all of the gains when Microsoft is doing good. When Microsoft is doing bad, what actually protects people and the property they lose during Microsoft's malice?
Let me bring Jeff in to answer that.
The people who have extracted those gains, they're all protected now. They've got that corporate shield. You're talking about the right here to the takings clause. Well, what about the right to lost profit? I mean, that's an obscure concept right there. Whenever you impose a regulation and a corporation is less profitable because of it, the corporation has a right to a lost profit. I mean, a lot of these concepts that come out are just as obscure when you play them on the current status quo.
I do want to hear what Jeff has to say, but I want to kind of put a finer point on the takings that you just said, because the way the initial case where judges, where the Supreme Court granted the takings clause to corporations and specifically the right to future profit was a case in Pennsylvania where mining companies were digging coal from under people's houses and causing people's houses to collapse in on themselves, people's property. And Pennsylvania passed a law that said you cannot dig under the houses in such a way to collapse them because people's property counts and people's health and safety counts too. And the courts overturned that Pennsylvania law and said you cannot do that unless you pay those coal companies for their profit that they would have lost by collapsing those people's homes. So where is the fairness in that? What about the people's rights to their property? It doesn't matter because the court has not been consistent or fair in this regard. And so we can't look to it to come up with a solution for us.
Sitting from the back end, you know, and just listening to this, I can see this one message point that Jeff has got here is really, I don't know, it's seeming that people are struggling with it. But the current status quo, people need to realize, is if not as absurd, then more absurd than what Jeff is speaking about. You know, I mean, like you say, if you say that, okay, now the mine company can no longer, make people live in these inhabitable conditions or destroy a community, and you start to regulate that mining company, then the mining company has claimed lost profits.
it's crazy.
Right? And guess what that means? That means communities don't pass those laws because they can't go bankrupt. They can't afford to protect their citizens.
You have a nuclear power plant. The nuclear power plant has a failure or something of that sort, and now suddenly who's left with all of these problems? Well, when they were doing good, they went up to the market. You know, they went up and they were distributed to the stockholders.
What's
when
the phrase,
bad,
Evan?
Who takes the hit?
What's the phrase? It is privatizing the profits and socializing the losses. That's what we have.
It's the very game, and corporations are in and of themselves a governmental entity. So you can't pretend like this is just free market. Corporations are granted a government immunity, right? They're granted immunity against damages. You have the stockholders, the people who own the shares in that company. There's I've heard it well argued before that they don't actually own the corporation itself because they are not liable in the event something bad happens to that corporation.
No kidding. That's exactly right.
And it's only sheltered because the government stepped in and said, look, these gains are going to be sheltered. In order to spur up investment, we're going to create a special type of governmental organization.
Entity.
Right? And in this process, you now have gains that are sheltered.
I think, you know, I can't speak of these particular, you know, the coal companies or whatnot, but I think just, you know, bringing up one thing, you know, I don't understand where the direction that this is going. You're seeing particular incidences where people have been harmed, their property has been harmed. They need to be held liable for it.
Jeff, here's the thing, and that's what we're saying.
But they can't be held liable if they have constitutional rights.
Exactly.
Because they're out of our control. Because they can overturn our attempts to regulate or to curb those excesses, and they can sue in court, and unfortunately the court, which I think the Supreme Court has a history of being a very corrupt institution, has almost always sided with those corporate rights. And they've gone, and I'm sorry that I forgot the second caller's name, the excellent points that you're making about we forget that corporations are a government entity and they have special powers. They're not the only way to do business. They're a special way to do business that gets certain powers and privileges and protections for the people, and it was supposed to be that in return they were more limited because of the inherent power that comes with those protections.
Let me ask Jeff a quick question here. Just one question right at you, and that would be this. If let's hypothetically construct an instance where the government acknowledges a special form of organization whereby the people who invest in that organization, they contribute their capital for the operation and whatnot, capital expenditures, they contribute their capital to fund that organization, get immunity from any form of liability that corporation has. That's the benefit of this form of governmental organization. That's why the government created it. But in the process of using this form of governmental organization, you are no longer protected by constitutional rights. That means here, I say, if I have a computer and the government has to take my computer, the government has to compensate me for that computer. But if my computer does something bad, it kills someone, it explodes, I'm liable for that damage, right, directly. Now
right.
I flip it and I say, okay, I'm depositing this computer in a corporation. You gave me the money to fund that, right? Now if my computer explodes, I bankrupt the corporation, no one's liable, it wasn't your fault, it's all good, it's that fictional,
and you keep the gains.
It's that fictional problem here, you keep the gains. But at the same time, if the government has to come in now and take that property, that's the draw. That's the downside to this form of governmental organization, this form of business organization. That's you know, benefits and losses with a special form of organization. Why is that such an obscure concept? Why does it always have to be that they have to go above and beyond the rights of people? Why can't they have some things that aren't allowed to people, such as immunity from liability, and at the same time have some things that people don't have, like not being able to petition for unreasonable takings, takings, period. I mean, that's a protection we're afforded, they're not afforded, and they're afforded a protection that we're not afforded.
I don't understand why
the premise of your argument is that they have to win at both things. They have to have both the immunity that I don't have, and they have to have the right to,
the same rights I have.
Right. I'm saying that's the very foundation of your argument, aside from it being more obscure than less obscure than the reality we have right now. You know, the reality of a Microsoft that can have this property taken, besides that being less obscure, the foundation's wrong. You know, they don't have to have every right we have. They can have some we don't. We can have some they don't.
So if you go out and see your situation that you're bringing up is, you know, you go out and you start up a computer corporation. You have your computer. You put it, you know, personally into an LLC. and something happens with that computer and it harms somebody, you know, maybe you were negligent, maybe you could be held, you know, liable, you know, without a corporate shield there as, you know, as personally responsible in some cases. I don't know case law. But now you're trying to take a situation like that of somebody that goes up and sets that up as justification that then if legislators want to get together and say, you know what, we want to take over Microsoft, we can do that.
No, not at all.
Right.
Look.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Why is that wrong?
No,
let me give you a better example.
Hold on.
You can't hijack my point and say I'm wrong. That's right.
It's my show. It is your thing, but it's my show. Now, as it turns out, that those actions are exactly the things that corporations do right now all of the times. Go ahead, Evan, now.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is that let's play this out the other direction. You have something like Hostess, right? Hostess is a corporation. You have people that are employed in Hostess, right? Now suddenly Hostess is not doing well, right? And this is the reality that we actually that was faced, right? And you have people that had extended money to Hostess, and Hostess is definitely liable to them. And in the same process, the people who had extended that money to Hostess are demanding that they have the liquidated value of Hostess, right? So what does the free market dictate under this current form of government corporation collusion? Because corporations are government themselves. You know, there's this collusion between private markets and government. The government says, okay, we're going to liquidate this company and we're going to sell it to a Mexican financier. That's the market solution to that. Now, I'd flip that on its head and I would say, what's fundamentally wrong with rather than saying, okay, because you know we can't go after the actual people who have the gains from Hostess. You know, we've shielded them. Rather than liquidating the company, what's wrong with legislators coming in and saying, okay, now it's the company that now it's the workers' company. We're going to free it of all liability because we as the government have done this before. We have bankruptcy laws. We have laws about corporate immunity. The government, that corporation has no more liability for past transgressions. It's going to start with zero balance capital, and now it's going to be in the hands of workers. I mean, that would be an example of the government exercising a takings clause on a corporation rather than just allowing those financiers to use it and liquidate it and sell it to a transnational.
So
I mean,
there's a corporation that has value. Somebody wants to step in and buy that company, but you want to say, no, you can't sell it. You've got to give it to the workers with no compensation. I don't understand that.
Because
they failed.
The very fact that they gave those shareholders immunity, right, against the loss from that corporation going under, to me was a detriment to the community. All different financiers, banks, companies in the production line, all of them could have lost out on that, right? And you can't go after the gains. So the flip side to it now is we're not going to allow the community to sink because you have 75,000 workers that are displaced because of mismanagement. So the government steps in and they say, okay, now it's the workers' company. This is the flip side to it. I mean, I don't see what's so wrong with that concept. That scenario I just
said. So you don't
what
see
is,
what's wrong
no,
with that concept
no, what's
of
wrong,
confiscating
it's a moral,
personal
it,
property?
Wait, no, it's a moral
you don't
issue.
You think
it's not
confiscating personal property and giving it to
That's not what's
people?
Happening. That's not what's happening. They failed at the corporation. They failed at the deal.
So? What's
when the
matter?
Corporation – well, they failed. That's what matters. They
so?
Failed.
And they're selling off the company and then the money goes back to the owners of the company.
The very
wrong.
Idea of a corporation is the theft of personal property in the event the corporation falters. The people who actually stole the money from Hostess are the ones who
stole
would
it. Who stole
That's right.
it?
Let me. You start a company that makes dairy or candies, you know, something of that sort. You have a candy company. I give you $100 into that company. I take out $1,000 of returns. Your company goes bankrupt. I have the $900, the wrong that your company has extracted. Otherwise, the people who had the claim to that $900 would all have it, and I would have nothing more than my
$100. Who has a claim to it? You're really losing me on this one.
No, actually, he's not losing anybody. He's actually right.
I'm saying I invested money in your company. I have made the returns on investment. The returns on investment are what you lost. Otherwise, you would be able to make all of your debtors whole and walk away from it with nothing. It's because
so company,
I made a return on that investment that you're no longer able to make all of your debtors whole.
Exactly. It's simple, Jeff.
Well, yeah, the company failed, but I don't understand why all of a sudden the government could step in and then take the company and give it to the workers.
Because, Jeff, what you're refusing to acknowledge is when a company fails, that comes at a tremendous cost to all the rest of the people who are involved in the company.
Well, what right does it, you know, what, they have a voluntary transaction there between the workers and the company. What right, you know, they don't have a
and there's
a
voluntary
right
transaction
a
between
job.
The company and the government. Okay, the government allowed
no,
the creation
you guys
of
are
that company.
No, you're trying to take this thing. You're trying to take, you know, a formation, a capital formation concept, and then all of a sudden, because the government does one thing, all of a sudden these rights explode all from there. So
no,
here's
the real problem, Jeff. The real problem is it's a morality problem. The real problem is that
you can't legislate morality.
I am not trying to legislate morality. What I'm saying is we won't allow capital to rule over humanity. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
period.
Yeah, and then you come in with legislation and force.
The problem is there's a fundamental difference of opinion about what a corporation is. We're coming from the perspective. And move to amend, that properly understood, a corporation is actually not an entirely private entity. It's a quasi-public, quasi-private entity. It has private money, but has public powers and privileges that have been granted on it. And there's a cost to those privileges back to the people, the government, for bestowing them because they're not inherent in the corporation. And that is the way that corporations have been historically treated up until the moment where corporate lawyers who sat on the Supreme Court decided to flip it around and change it. And what we're saying is we don't need to accept that. Corporations do not exist unless government creates them. And that it does mean something, Jeff. That's fundamental to their definition.
I think it'll be a very dark day in the United States if people get their way and say takings clause doesn't apply, First Amendment doesn't apply, due process doesn't apply, search and seizure doesn't apply to corporations, and it's all left up to the legislators. You will grind this. Number one,
that's how it was in the beginning.
You're taking away individuals own corporations, and they own part of that. So whenever you come in and take it, you're taking it from individuals.
If the individual owns the corporation, he has the liability. This is where I'm saying that you have a different mechanism here. You're using these terms and conflating them. If you have it to where the corporation is immune from something, right, it's no longer the individuals that own it. Otherwise, it's just the partnership. And you can still have those in this world that they're espousing. So if you have two people that join in a partnership, right, they have no legal form of immunity. Then individually, you cannot go and take their jointly owned property.
Exactly.
Just like you can't take a jointly owned property of a husband and wife, right? They're together in marriage. They've purchased the property jointly. You can't go take it. And it has nothing to do with the corporation. When the corporation gets immunity, you lose that right.
So your position is that since in a corporate structure or a limited liability corporation structure, or I guess you could even apply it to a partnership where the limited partners have limited liability, therefore since the government in this structure has granted you limited liability, you no longer have any constitutional rights. The government and the legislature can come and take whatever property they want. They don't.
You're taking that to the extreme.
Yeah.
No, let me be clear.
Jeff, this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying that You're right. In the extreme form, you would have no rights. But in a better form, you would have rights explicitly granted to you but not assumed because of personhood.
Under the whim of politicians. You're not going to get anybody
how it
to go
be.
Into that.
And that
under
is how
the
it
whim
should
of politicians?
Be. And
no,
that
it shouldn't.
It should be because the only people that should have inalienable rights are human beings. Everything created by politicians should be governed by politicians. But look. Hold on, Jeff. A corporation was created by politicians, okay? And therefore, it is in the domain of the politicians to regulate that corporation, to determine under what the purview of that corporation will operate, period. But what we've done is somehow allowed this governmental entity to then somehow become a person? Makes no sense.
Jeff,
hey guys, can I?
What is your objection to having everyone, right, that wants to run a business, actually go and formulate that business under the terms of a partnership. A partnership of two people, three people, however many shareholders you have, you formulate the business under the terms of a partnership. So they're direct owners of that, right? What would be your objection to that? Well, what do you not have in that you have in a corporation?
What, you're saying eliminate the limited liability shield of a corporation?
Yes.
No more liability, period. Now everything is a partnership. What is your objection to that? Then you have all of the rights of the Constitution.
You know, I would have to take a look into in studying that more. You know, that's a very well accepted practice.
You know why you have to study it more, Jeff? You have to study it more because what Evan has just done is remove the extraordinary amount of rights granted a corporation over at the average human being.
But I don't see where you get what you're trying here, and I've got to go, and I don't want to, you know, I appreciate you guys letting me talk here, and I don't want to take over your show here because a lot of your listeners may be very well bored with this, I don't know. But here's my position, is that, you know, and I understand your argument is that since government granted limited liability status to a corporation, therefore they have no constitutional rights, and then they're exposed to the takings clause, search and seizure, and all of these other protections that you're afforded individuals.
Right.
And I guess if that's really the principle, you know, I have an issue with that. I don't understand just because of the limited liability, you know, we granted limited liability, therefore if the government decides that they want to go in and take over Microsoft and give it to the workers, that they can do that. I don't see that step.
I don't have limited liability. If I have a gun on the table and a kid picks it up and he shoots himself in the head, you come after me, you get all of my assets, right? Left bankruptcy. That's how it works. If I put that gun inside of a corporation, right? I buy that gun inside of a corporation, a kid picks it up, he shoots himself in the head, right? Now suddenly who's at fault for it? If I'm a limited partner, no one, even though I gave them the capital to buy the gun. It's a special right. And it's that you're not right to say that you wouldn't have that they would totally lose the right to takings. They might very well have that right. But it's for the legislators to decide what body of rights they get and they don't get because they're not people.
Okay, and I need to bring Robert back in. And by the way, I love that you said that, Evan. It is for the legislature to determine that. And the legislature is elected by the people. So please do remember that. Robert, you wanted to get in.
I've been listening to the whole thing intently. I have to tell all of you in the group, in my opinion, that you guys have complicated a very simple issue in my mind, especially involving a libertarian.
Please
don't
complicate
it,
Robert.
And this is what I mean. First of all, when it comes to corporations, period, regardless of what the argument of whether or not they have constitutional rights, the only rights that we're talking about here in this conversation are rights that were legislated. You have the amendments to the Constitution. Let's just talk about the original Bill of Rights, the first 10. You go down the list. These rights, these absolute rights under our government that were created, are for the individual. You've heard me talk about this many times. And one of my problems with the libertarian argument is that they tend to forget that all of the 10 are exclusively for the individual.
I think you're correct there, Robert.
Robert,
and that is what I hit Jeff with. You're incorrect. The libertarian mantra is the individual, not the corporation. So Jeff was fusing libertarianism with republicanism. Continue.
Right, going from the beginning. The corporations were created by government, as has been listed here. I really don't care about what rights that they gave them from the standpoint of legislation as far as this issue is concerned. The move to amend issue, what it does is it basically eliminates all of that action that has happened that was created by the government. It puts us back to the basics of the individual, and that's the people who are supposed to be electing our government officials and running this country. It is not supposed to be us and them. There is only one entity. Now, if you want to, on the flip side, let's say the option would be to create an amendment that makes corporations people. Let that, you know, I mean, that those are the two things. The move to amend, in my view, is what it's doing is it's pointing out to people that this is something that was created that was totally opposite what the framers had in mind, what our Constitution says. Because it was written for the individual, there's no way around that. That's why even though it was written by elitists, even though it may not have predicted everything was happening, it runs into itself all the time because one person in this country has these rights, corporations do not. You brought up the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment is a probable cause issue in order to get around the Fourth Amendment, but it is still written for the people. Life, liberty, and property is not written for the corporations. Cruel and unusual punishment. It's not written for the corporations. The Second Amendment is not written for corporations. All of these are individual rights. All that's happening is corporations have been given, granted, rights equal to me. That doesn't say it in the Constitution. It was made up by the judiciary on the basis of the corporations being created by the legislative. That's what this is all about.
And that's why I said earlier.
So if you want to say that corporations are people, then make an amendment that says it, because that's the only way it has the equal value of me. It doesn't have it any other way.
Well, you know, that's why I said in the beginning that this law was simply made to force the judiciary to act appropriately, because it is the judiciary that has allowed, and Caitlin knows the laws. Which are the two, brother? What are the two law, the two court cases, Caitlin? I guess she's not with us right now. But anyway.
Oh, can you hear me? Sorry.
Yes, I can hear you now.
About the two main ones that we addressed?
Right.
The Buckley v. Vallejo decision of the 70s and originally Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, although there are many cases along the way that help build corporate constitutional rights.
Absolutely.
And that is, in effect, that is what this amendment is going to fix. The judiciary will no longer be able to interpret the law, because our amendment actually says simply the fact they're not people. End of discussion.
And Caitlin, I'm sure, realized this. I mean, this has been discussed, too, as far as the Citizens United decision history. The Supreme Court actually expanded the scope of the original appeal. It
mm-hmm.
wasn't even on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically turned it around and said, okay, I need you to answer this, and we're going to address this. It wasn't even on the table. So in actuality, what the Supreme Court did, as far as the actual letter of the law is concerned, is that it ignored the record and created another one and then ruled on it, which they're not allowed to do.
Well, they made law.
According to
the
law.
And they did the same thing in the first case that where they allegedly granted personhood to corporations. There were repeated attempts to get that case decided by the court, because people were gaining more and more rights with, you know, basically, I mean, you can look at this country and say, you know that at the beginning, when you look at the Constitution, it sounds great, but unfortunately, only a small percentage of the population actually had those rights applied to them, actually had personhood. Women didn't. African Americans didn't. Native people didn't. If you didn't have enough property in many states, you didn't. And so then there were struggles to drive people actually into the Constitution, into those ideals, and that's the subsequent amendments that we saw, the Bill of Rights actually being the first one, because remember, the original Constitution didn't even have those. That wasn't even the original proposal.
Right.
That was a compromise. And so as more and more people start gaining rights and access to the Constitution, all of a sudden corporations, and it's really not corporations, it's the wealthy few, start realizing that they need to figure out another way to keep their control over everyone else. And so corporations become the dominant institution out of the Civil War. And then there was case after case where they were trying to go into the Supreme Court, where corporate lawyers were making the argument corporations should have constitutional rights. And the court originally said no, 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 and also incidentally said no to women under the 14th Amendment, when women said that laws that kept them from voting violated their equal protection. And the Supreme Court, the same court that gave rights to corporations, said doesn't apply to women. And it's the same thing with Citizens United. There were several attempts to try and basically create the scenario and the situation that would allow them to get to where they were. So to hold this up as if it is some kind of, you know, sacred process is ludicrous and delusional. What's going on here is there are people who have control, and they want to continue to consolidate that control and that power and that wealth, and we're letting them get away with it and then chalking it up to be some kind of sacred constitutional process. Jefferson himself was totally opposed to the idea of judicial review, and in Marbury versus Madison, when the court bestowed that right upon themselves to basically make law, Jefferson said, that's it, the whole thing's done. There's no point to this, because it's not going to work, because the judiciary will basically construe the Constitution to be whatever they want it to be.
Exactly. 781, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, this is Kathleen. Good program today.
What's your name?
Kathleen.
Kathleen, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We are doing just fine. Join the discussion.
Oh, great program.
Thank you.
First, I have to admit I don't know a lot about Citizens United, just from what I've looked up on the computer. I've done some research, but a lot of it is legal stuff, which I don't understand. So I had a couple of points that if I could make and then get you guys to comment, because I'll end up forgetting.
No problem. Me too.
So don't interrupt you. We won't.
No. I don't mean interrupt. I just mean, you know, my brain will, you know, forget the points I'm trying to make. But I looked at the Citizens United page, and it does seem to be constructed by and fueled by Republicans, with very few exceptions. So I wanted your comment on that. And also, I wondered if you could explain the relationship between what happened with the FEC during, I believe it was 2011, when Hillary was running, because I think that was the key to part of this. So could you explain what happened when the FEC ruled that they couldn't put this sponsored ad on TV, and then the response of the court? Like, how did that tie in together as far as conservatives, Democrat? What was the spin on that, if any?
Okay, I'm going to take the first one. The reason why when you type in Citizens United in the computer, most of what you see come up has to do with it on the right side of the equation is because they were smart enough to buy up all the different search keys that you would search for on Google or Bing or whatever so that their website supersedes most of the others. And I'll leave the technical part to Caitlin. Caitlin?
Well, my understanding of Citizens United is that there was a movie about Hillary Clinton, you know, against Hillary Clinton, that was put out by Citizens United, which is not, you know, the Republican campaign. It's an independent, separate entity, but it was, you know, against Hillary Clinton, and the FEC ruled that, which is the, you know, regulatory body of the election law for the federal government, ruled that it had violated McCain-Feingold in terms of campaign spending. And so basically what the court did is they ruled with the Citizens United organization and thereby kind of overturning the parts of McCain-Feingold that limited independent campaign expenditures. Independent expenditures are those ones that come from outside of the campaign. Supposedly, you know, there are rules about not coordinating and working together, but it would be very hard to really know whether that's happening. But supposedly, if you do not coordinate, then basically you can make unlimited expenditures, whereas there are limits on other types of expenditures that are coming directly, you know, from the campaign or to the campaign. But as long as you're basically advocating for one person or another and you're doing it, you know, not through the campaign, then it just opens the door up to be able to do whatever you want, basically. And that was what Citizens United allowed. And that was what their goal was to try and bring into question these independent expenditures. And that's why there was so much talk in the last election, although it's interesting, it was also there in the election before that, before Citizens United, the 527s. I don't know if you all remember.
We hear
about them all the time. The same thing. It's independent expenditures. And so it's not like they were really all that regulated before Citizens United. But the thing is, the lawyer who argued the Citizens United case, his goal is actually much broader. He has his agenda, and he's the Citizens United lawyer, is to actually get the court to rule that all disclosure laws, all laws that force you to disclose where your money comes from as a candidate, are unconstitutional and a violation of the First Amendment right not to speak. And so Citizens United was just his first step.
And but that's the mentality. That's where this person is coming from, that there should be unlimited amounts of money spent and that we should have no idea where they come from, because to limit in any way that spending or even to disclose it and make it public is a violation of the First Amendment rights of people and corporations.
Okay. And move to amend. I also read that the wording of it won't hold up in the legal system. What do you?
Well, I don't know where you read that. I mean, the if you pass an amendment,
you can't.
There is no legal system to get rid of it. I mean, that's why we're going to an amendment, is because Congress at this point, by the Supreme Court deciding it, it's the last resort we have. We cannot get Congress. Congress doesn't have authority to overturn the Supreme Court. Only we do through passing an amendment.
Okay. We're closing in on time, and I see Jeff wants to talk again. But before Jeff, 936 came in. 936, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Is that 936-273-4038?
Yes, sir. That's you.
Okay. I wanted to commend you on this program. That's
What's your name,
very
sir?
Very good information, but I do want to bring up something different.
Can I get your name first, sir?
Bruce Barnes.
Thank you, Bruce.
Okay, and I want to bring up something different, and that's the 2013 elections. And the last day to have to file for a candidacy is March the 1st mm-hmm. for the May 11th thing. And I'd like to invite you and your visitors to a meeting with the Montgomery County Democratic Club on Thursday, 6 o'clock at the library by the South Montgomery County.
Is that Montgomery office. County in Texas or Montgomery County in Virginia?
Here
in
Texas?
Excellent.
In Texas, right at the Woodlands.
Great. Thank you very much, Bruce.
There's quite a bit. There are more offices open during the 2013 elections than there are during the even number elections. And we wanted to make sure that everybody is aware of it. And it's across some county lines, too, like the Lone Star College goes into Kingwood and North Harris County and a couple precincts out of San Jacinto County. And we need to get everybody involved in electing people here to make a difference.
Look, Bruce, let me tell you, I appreciate you. Go ahead and send me email, egberto@coffeepartyusa.com or egberto@egberto. Actually, send it. I don't know if that email is working. We've been going through some email issues. So send it to egberto@egbertowillies.com, and I'll make sure that it gets dispersed both on my local blog and throughout the domain. Okay?
That would be great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Keep up the good work here.
Thank you, sir. You have a wonderful day now. And, Jeff, you're back in, my brother.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I just want to make sure that I understand the premises of you know, the position, you know, because my premise is, as I've stated, you know, that I have a real problem if corporations don't have First Amendment rights, if they're, you know, open to search and seizure, if they're open to takings and so forth. And if I recall and understand this correctly, the position is that the corporations do not have these constitutional rights because they have been granted limited liability. So the price of limited liability is, well, that's what, I'm sorry, I forgot his name, but
Evan wasn't saying that the reason for this amendment was because we somehow gave them the liability. The reason for this amendment is simply, and I'm going to go back to Rodrigo, restate Rodrigo. It's a lot simpler than we're making it. We're simply saying that only individuals have the inalienable rights granted by the Constitution, no more, no less. This corporate entity created by our legislature, by our politicians, would also be regulated by the politicians, and the laws that apply to this entity would also be legislated by the politicians, but there is no inherent constitutional right in which allows the judiciary to come and overtake whatever laws we the people may want to apply to whatever we determine is that corporate entity. Nothing more, nothing less.
So then tomorrow, if the legislator decided that they wanted to take over Microsoft they can do that because Microsoft has no constitutional protections.
As long as it doesn't apply to the individual. In other words, as long as it doesn't somehow affect the individual's inalienable right, of course that is so. And why shouldn't it be so?
I just want to point out that
yes, I think it is important to look at, you know, extreme scenarios and take them into account. But to start there and end there is a little bit irrational because it's not about one politician going in. It's about if this politician can get the majority of a legislature that is elected by the people without special interest money anymore to agree to pass a law that would somehow allow not just Microsoft but any entity that fits this to have some kind of extreme situation like what you're describing. So it's not like anyone, it's not anarchy and mayhem the way that you're describing. What we're saying is the legislative democratic process is where these decisions should be made because they're political questions. And right now, they're outside of our realm, and we need to put them back in our realm. And then, of course, we need to be responsible and fair and judicious about how we exercise it. But, you know, there would be a whole set of powers and privileges that would be granted to these entities to safeguard against these extreme examples that you're describing that are basically like, you know, Nazi Germany or something like that, I am not worried about the people not being able to hold our elected officials accountable once we get big money out of the political process.
Okay, look, we're down to 5 minutes, and it looks like 6:20 wants to come in. 6:20, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Jack Golden again.
Jack Golden, make your point, and quickly, please, my dear brother, because we're running out of time.
Okay. I enjoyed speaking to whatever her name is.
Caitlin, she's great, isn't she?
They move to a men. Move to a men.
Yes.
I think I'm going to join this organization.
Good.
That's
we
great.
We like the idea that you're going to be both in Coffee Party USA and Move to a Men because these are the organizations.
Exactly paying money. I'm not exactly paying money.
Well, you better start,
my
friend.
I'm officially in it.
Good. I'm glad that you're good.
Contributing to the ideas.
Good. Well, we want your ideas,
money.
But if you have the money too, we need your money. And that we don't mean for us, but we mean to move this cause forward. Okay, my dear brother?
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Now, Caitlin, we only have 5 minutes, so what I'm going to ask you to do is give me and usually I go around with all the people that are still online to give a closing word. I don't have the time to do that today. So why don't you give me a quick closing word so that I can close this baby up?
Well, I appreciate Jeff, bringing up his points. He brought in my most difficult, the libertarian argument. I think in some ways there's a fundamental worldview difference that we're not going to convince each other. But I hope for everyone else out there, and also for Jeff, that the conversation was, you know, provocative and interesting. And this is the point of Move to Amend. We need to be asking these questions. We cannot blindly follow the Supreme Court off the cliff that they've led us on. We need to be asking these questions about the powers and privileges in our society. And in many ways, the question of who should have personhood is like, that's where you start from. That is the fundamental place that you begin to imagine all rights and powers and how they will operate. And it is way past due that as a society we are actually having those debates. We have taken what we've been given for far too long, and that's what the point of Move to Amend is, to provoke these questions. And if you are interested in helping us pass this amendment, because we're going to see it through, please join us at movetoamend.org, and you can join over 260,000 people who have pledged to get involved. As I said, we have local affiliates all over the country. We are a grassroots campaign, and we really emphasize local organizing and people power. And so I think that if you're interested in any of that, there's a place for you in Move to Amend. And just thanks, Egberto. I wasn't planning to spend this long today.
I asked you for 15 minutes, and you gave me 2 hours. My God, you took my show over. There were so many other things that we wanted to talk about. But folks, look,
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. But you were, Caitlin, you were wonderful. Caitlin, you presented information that the entire Body Politic needed, that both Coffee Party USA listeners and for the Move to Amend listeners that we brought in today needed. Thank you very much. Folks, remember, you are the one that's going to make the difference. Please get on to www.coffeepartyusa.com. Join us. If you have the wherewithal, we actually need to be funded as well. And likewise, movetoamend.org. These are two wonderful organizations. They're also, they work separately and together to do what is necessary to move our middle class, our body politic forward. We need you. There was quite a bit that we were to cover on this show that we didn't based on this week's show. But as you know, this is your show, and we take the show wherever you guys make us take this show. But please go to the blog. Please go ahead and click and see the articles that were written this week. Please go ahead and see what all that we were going to talk about today, because it is all there written. Thank you for spending some time with me. Thank you, Caitlin.
Hey, Brando, can I say one more thing?
Please, so you have 5 seconds.
I'm sorry. Evan, if you're out there and you haven't touched base with Move to Amend yet, I'd love to talk to you because your points were so eloquent and so clearly made. I'd love to connect with you further.
Evan is ours, our local Move
to
Amend.
No, contact me, Evan. Let's talk.
No, he's ours. Thank you. Anyway, guys, thank you very much for listening. And come back next week. We'll have some more good stuff for you. And Evan, do contact her. She's a wonderful lady. Thank you, folks. Have a wonderful Saturday. I'm out.